Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to RedFab Radio.
It's our 90th podcast in this particular format. A mini milestone. I like the number 90. It's good, isn't it? On the scale of numbers, how good a number is it?
It's good because it's even. And I like even numbers.
You do. Very much so. What's the rule of thumb when it comes to volume on devices?
I knew you were going to go there. So it has to be an even number. It can never be an odd number. It can only be an odd number if it's an even style odd number.
Like 25.
25 is an acceptable odd number. 15 is an acceptable odd number. 5, not so much. Don't ask me why.
So it has to be an even number unless it's incremental. Until you get past 10, in which case it can be increments of 5.
Yeah, that's right.
Fantastic. That wasn't the kick-off question.
I literally live my life by that, by the way. Like he will be in the car with me, putting the volume up, or in your car, just putting it up once to see if I notice, and I'm like, fucking hell, like, just turn it down.
I used to do it all the time. Like the car, the Kia Picanto from back in the day, a wonderful little machine, and yeah, that just like, because the subtleties, the sounds, you know, sometimes one time, how does it handle it? Because on modern tellies,
yeah,
like, there's a big difference.
Well, if there's... Sometimes they do like those in between the lines.
What about your bedroom telly? Because you can wake your kids up quite easily with if your telly volume goes askew.
I've never really noticed that our telly's in a wardrobe, isn't it? So it's like directionally, it's like pointing forwards directly to our bed, essentially. But some tellies have that like. Heart, like no line, then a line. You've always got to put it on the line.
Oh no! Oh god! I don't think tellies even do that anymore.
That I don't know. I'm just something back that
in the
I
days
remembered.
Of back in the days of teletext. Yeah, yeah. But the students also had that. Anyway, the kickoff question this week comes from Jay Ellis, Joshua John Ellis on Twitter. Says, Pepe Reina 2006-2007 or Alisson this year? Who are you going for?
I don't even think it's close. I'm going for Alisson this season.
I think it should be close. I think, as ever, the fact that we've got Alisson here right now and it's been so long and we had to live through the tail years of Pepe Reina a little bit kind of does it. After he basically won us the FA Cup, everyone goes about the Gerrard final. Pepe Reina won that FA Cup for us just as much as Steven Gerrard did. And he was even better. I actually think up to like 2008, 2009, I thought he was absolutely peak. But I do agree with you ultimately that Alisson is... Pepe Reina was almost a prototype in that regard. He was quite ahead of his time in how he was a goalkeeper. I think he was much better aerially than Alisson is, just in terms of his punching and stuff. I think Alisson gets away with some stuff more, and that might be a height thing because when you're big, you tend not to be as good at jumping because you've never really had to jump a lot. They always said that about Peter Crouch. Yeah,
it's Ronaldo's tall and he's like the best leaper.
Well, that's why he's unstoppable, isn't it? You know, that's the thing. A lot of people don't. It's just not a necessary thing. Barreira was absolutely phenomenal, and we used to go on about his distribution, but Alisson's distributions.
I think the way that you said it then, with it being a prototype, is the exact right way of saying it. I think if you put Pepe Reina in to this league, not just this team now, he might be above average on his distribution, and he probably is above average, but he was way ahead of the time back then. I think the game's changed so much. It's like, I always think of Gary Neville as one of the best fullbacks the league's seen. Throw him in a modern side, looks crap.
Okay. crucified these days. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, definitely. Yeah, and it'll be interesting to see that. Like, obviously, he's in the final days of his career, really, isn't he, Pepe? But people often ask this, like, about the backup goalkeeper situation. I'd love it. We've missed the boat on Reina, but like Pepe over any time over the last 4 years, while he's not been at the club, would have been a perfect understudy for Alisson. That, you know, someone who comes in who just, it's like Vorm at Spurs.
Yeah.
You know, you get a guy who comes in and he plays the same way, so you don't have to completely change. Like Mignolet plays a completely different way, so it compromises what we try to do. Yes, interesting question. Thank you very much for that, Joshua. If you disagree with us, by all means, please use the comments section or tweet at the Redmen TV. Let's get into your news in brief then. Trent out injured for a month, Chris. All of a sudden, all that chat of wasn't he dead brave and playing through and played the full 90 minutes even though he was meant to be injured, doesn't look quite so brilliant.
No, it looks a little bit silly now, doesn't it? But do you get the 3 points without him?
That's a good point.
I've heard no one say that, and you know, sliding doors, you may not.
Mm.
We got the 3 points, that's what mattered then. We've got another few games where he'll probably miss three or four games, maybe. I think, you know, what it boils down to on this one is that everybody's talking about the Nathaniel Clyne stuff.
Yeah.
And I feel like I addressed this pretty well last week or the week before, is that...
Well, look, immediate reaction. You can't help, without looking into it or analysing it, Liverpool, I've got Gomez out injured at the moment, albeit back soon, Trent out injured, and our next choice, or the right back, we've just let go out on loan. So top line, it seems like a criminal oversight from Liverpool to let him go, and that's a typical thing for us to do, is we've cut off our nose despite our face, yada, yada, yada. I understand why people are wound up by it, but it is very much a top line analysis of the situation.
Yeah, I think, look, you know, I said before, Paul, Klopp is the manager that he is because of who he is, and he's the type of person who will let a player go if they're unhappy, who doesn't want to be there, who doesn't want to fight for it. Klein was one appearance away, if we were to win the league, of getting a medal. Mm-hmm. He doesn't get a medal now. And I kind of respect that a little bit from Nathaniel Klein. You know, he wants to go out there, he wants to play football, he doesn't want to be behind a 20-year-old lad vying for a right-back spot at his age of his career. And I kind of respect that. What I do think could have been done is that, Nathaniel, you can go out. Just give us the end of January, mate.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I think could have been done, rather than the first week in January when the window's just opened. Yeah. Let us get through these injuries because they're coming back.
Yeah.
And we'll let you go at the end of the month,
it's
mate.
It's tough,
you never
isn't
know.
It?
You're going to get a game against Wolves. You don't know what's coming down the line.
It's interesting.
But you don't know whether Bournemouth would accept something like that.
Well, exactly that, because it's interesting, because what the Neil Warnock stuff off the back of it kind of let us into a little peek into the world of what's happening for these football clubs. You know, he missed out, he said in his own words, he missed out on other right-back options and another forward, because you can only have so many inter-Premier League loans. You can't use that space up, so they didn't want it when they think something's going to happen. So Bournemouth probably couldn't afford to sit by. In fact, because of the Cardiff stuff, they probably were like, well, it's kind of now or never. If you want him, you'd have him now, or he'll be a Cardiff instead. So it's funny how it does work out, and maybe there would be a regret from Klein, because, you know, he could have just stuck it out another week, and he'd have got the best of both worlds. He gets to have his Premier League medal, and he gets to have his move as well. But you can't live like that, can you? You know, that's you know.
No, and if you believe everything that Dave Maddox saying on Twitter about Klopp being happy that Milner's going to have more chance to be an influence on this side, be it at right back, be it off the bench in midfield, or maybe as a starter in midfield, then take the manager at his words, you know, or take Maddox at his words, because he knows what he's doing. Like, I lost my head. The biggest I've lost my head on Liverpool was this time last season when we sold Coutinho.
You did a rant video on it.
Yeah, I did a rant video on it. It's the first time I've ever lost my head in that way about something that's going on, when really the club's moving in the right direction. You know, I truly believed at the time that it was a terrible decision, and I was proved wrong. And that was Phil Coutinho.
Yeah.
A world-class attacking midfielder. This was our third-choice right-back that we've let out.
Yeah.
I'm not going to lose sleep over this in the same way that I lost sleep over Phil Coutinho, because the manager's got enough credit in the bank and he's done enough in his career for me to say he knows more than me.
Yeah, I think we're so scared of everything, aren't we? We're so scared of everything going wrong, and this is one of those prime examples of this could be this could prove to be an absolutely terrible, terrible thing, but you can't. You have to plan for the positive. You have to have backup plans in place. Liverpool have backup plans in place. As mentioned, James Milner can do the job. Push comes to shove, Fabinho can do the job. Push comes to shove, Jordan Henderson can do the job. Gini Wijnaldum can do the job. Rafa Camacho can do the job. Keanu Hoover can do the job. Joe Gomez will be back soon enough and do the job. So we're not desperate. Now, if Liverpool were to pick up another injury, then that starts to make it increasingly more difficult. It does, or you have a setback to go. These things happen, but you can't. There's a limit to what you can legislate for. There just is. There's a limit to what you can plan for, and you can't. You can't keep a player who doesn't want to play for. If Klein was so desperate to not play to go and play elsewhere, then as you say, he opted to give up on a chance of winning a Premier League
to go and play for Bournemouth.
So he's really
got no chance of winning anything ever for the rest of his career. He might have a chance of getting back to a big club.
Yeah,
and he might force our manager to change his mind about him. But he wasn't going to get the opportunities. Now, you look at Nathaniel, and he's a good player, but I do feel like the team's moved on slightly from him. You know, he's a very, very, very good fullback, but maybe not in this Liverpool side.
This team is accelerated past the team. It's like, you know, you've used the old Mario Kart thing of having, like, the ghost, basically, where you see your previous best lap and you race against yourself, effectively. Liverpool are doing that, and there's areas of this team where we've accelerated past our previous self quite easily. Now, we've done that at the back. Virgil van Dijk, you know, head and shoulders quicker and better and stronger than we've had that's gone before him. Similar with Alisson. Some players it's taken a little bit longer. I think Nathaniel Klein showed with his performance against Manchester United, and I think he's shown from what I'm told, he's shown his performances so far for Bournemouth, that it's not a massive drop-off. This is a very, very talented international class fullback. It's night and day in certain areas, but like, and similar like Jordan Henderson, we might find in another year's time that, you know, with another purchase in midfield and Fabinho emerging, that we outgrow Jordan Henderson the way that we've outgrown Lallana, and we've outgrown, probably we're getting towards outgrowing Matip, Lovren, Mignolet, etc. But that's the thing with Klein. He is very, very good, and he would be. At least in contention for the first team slot for the vast majority of teams in the Premier League, even probably a lot of the top four sides. It's horses, of course. Depends what you're looking for, and obviously for our style of play, he's only ever going to be a 7 out of 10.
Has anybody thought that Klopp actually might prefer Milner as an option there to Klein? Has anybody thought that?
Better on the ball.
He is, you know, and how many right backs can you carry? You know, we had Trent Alexander-Arnold, he's the number one. You've got Joe Gomez, he's injured, okay. You've got then Nathaniel Klein, you've got James Milner.
The question is, how many specialists can you carry?
Thing, because Klopp doesn't particularly like specialists. I think he understands that he's going to have a big squad, but he's not going to have the biggest squad. And what you need when you haven't got the biggest squad is lads who can play in all different positions.
Man City have been playing Fabian Delph at left-back. Because
fucking Ashley Young.
Well, exactly.
Ashley Young's made a natural career.
Antonio Valencia. You know, granted to them, you know, they've decided that they are fullbacks. You know, like, it's not, they're not doing a makeshift job. Someone can, they converted, and that's what they are. You know, but it, as you say, in terms of the specialist thing, you can't keep a fucking. We barely have room for them on the bench. You know, like, there was Andy Robertson is the best left back in the world right now. He couldn't get on our bench at a point last season because we just haven't got the room for a guy who can only play left back. So if you're gonna be a specialist, you need to be a world class specialist to get in this squad. And I don't think that's what it is. And it's not criticism of Daniel Klein. I would be made up to have him here available to us. I would be. Breathing, I'd be much more comfortable and much more happy to have Nathaniel Klein available to us, but we don't. But I'm not arsed. I'm not totally arsed because it's James Milner. We'll see. We'll see how he fares, but he's good in the tackle. He's got great reading of the game. He understands how the team works. He's played in a bunch of positions in the team, so he's got that understanding as well. He's dead experienced. He's a cool head. He's great in attack as
Listen,
well.
And the other thing that, you know, we didn't mention it on the build-up show for this game, but he's a very good set piece taker. He's probably our best corner taker.
Okay. Yeah.
You know, Shaqiri's stepped up over the last couple of weeks, but beyond that, no.
Yeah.
Trent's the only other one, isn't he? And Trent's out.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I think James Milner being in the side is a good thing. And, you know, I wonder whether people will revise their opinions if James Milner's the one that gets the assist.
Yeah, absolutely. Gini Wijnaldum, we know he's out as well, certainly for the weekend. Past that, we're not too sure at the moment. But
big miss.
Yeah, he's been great this season. I think we're lucky the timing of this has been slightly fortuitous in that Matt have coming back. It just seems to have come back. He's tagged Gini out as he's come back in, which means Fabinho can go into midfield, and so we're not desperately short.
I don't think we were anyway. It felt like if Matip isn't ready and available, which I think he will be, sometimes there's, you know, I already mentioned it earlier, the sliding doors thing. Is that Keita's in? You know what I mean? I think, you know, to see a Henderson and a Keita midfield or a Keita and a Fabinho midfield is something that I'd like to see. Home game against a team lower down the division is one of those games where you would be all right with it.
Yeah.
Although I think I would absolutely prefer Gini to be fit, and I would absolutely prefer Fabinho to be alongside Jordan Henderson. But you never know how the dynamic changes, do you, these injuries?
Yeah.
Listen, Trent gets a start because of an injury, doesn't he?
Yeah.
And he takes that place.
Yeah, absolutely. And two years ago today as well.
And Nathaniel Klein's gone out on loan because of it.
Exactly. And I think that more the concern is just in terms of the midfield, taking two men out of the midfield. We've largely got, three guys that we 100% trust in a two-man midfield. And then you're talking Milner and Keita can... There's no reason why they can't do it because they're midfielders. But if you're then forced to play one of them in that, forced to... You're then looking to, do we need to change the formation if something happens beyond that? If you want, you know, you can't rotate that in.
I don't think there's a problem with Keita being as part of it too. I just don't think we've seen it yet. Yeah. I think that's why you're scared. But he did it at Leipzig. He's done it in his career before. He's played in a two-man midfield. The reason I actually think that he hasn't utilised him in a two is because I think he's struggling with the pace of the games. And I think you just get that little bit more time and space on the wing.
And he's,
I think
kind of
he's trying to introduce him in that way to try and get his confidence
you
up
can
a little
see
bit.
See how he plays. Yeah. He wants to take people on. He's very aggressive in possession. Now, if you're not quite up to speed of the league, you can see it. Look what happened against was it the weekend? Brighton. You know, he nearly threw it away.
Not going to help you out there. You're going to have to come to this one on your own.
Listen, Wolf. He nearly threw it away because of that, and he's got that in him. Naby Keita has won a game where he just does something daft in possession. Now, I it starts to make me feel it's very Luis Garcia in that regard. You know, I can see that. I don't think he will be unilaterally loved by our fan base because of that. Because if you're a guy who tries things, inevitably you're the guy who fails things because you can't win 100% of your battles when you're taking people on in dribbles and what have you. So I wonder if that's it. That until we see proven otherwise, and with the evidence that we've seen, you're not relying on him in that position because he's just too close. Mm-hmm. He's too close to the dangerous area of the pitch if he's playing deeper, whereas I can understand playing him a bit further, put him in the three behind Salah because... Yeah, go and do that. Go and charge people for breaks.
Exactly. Do you remember that turn he did in the left back position though? Early on in the season. I mean, that was wondrous.
Oh, Palace.
Wondrous.
Yeah, Palace. Wondrous. Yeah, brilliant. He's class, isn't he? And I'm sure it'll come good for him. Liverpool have been training a new training kit. Not particularly interesting in and of itself because it's just clothes, isn't it? But I thought what I find interesting about this, I don't think we did it prior to last season, but we very, very clearly did this when they came back into January training. And I think about the Klopp thinks a lot about these things, the psychological impact of the you know, clothes make it the man, that kind of stuff, and how we did it last year. You know, you came back, you're talking about being refreshed and reinvigorated and bonding the group together, and just to help it from getting stale. And you come in, here's some fresh threads for you to try. It's not a big thing. It's not a massive deal. But I love the fact that these are the little considerations that go into how we construct what we do at Melwood.
Maybe. I mean, I couldn't tell you. I can speculate. I know that Klopp, as you mentioned, is massively into that type of thing, and you could understand if that was a reason why. You could also understand if it was the marketing team going, let's get this out there and let's build up a bit of a head of steam on for when it goes on sale. But players do, I think, like that. I've been watching All or Nothing on Michigan University, the U. And they go, their players went mad for the Michigan boots, absolutely like screaming and like they're just jumping up and down and they've got these branded Michigan boots that they've always wanted and all that type of stuff. So I can understand why a group of fellas in that environment, that will give them a little bit of juice.
Just actually, it's just one of the things. It's just breaks up the monotony, just makes the thing that seems different. All of a sudden, you just have to switch on a bit more, that little bit of complacency of, I know what everyone looks like, I know where everyone is. It's a bit second nature to me to, like, oh, even just that little thing, it just requires you to switch on a bit more to do, and it gives you a bit of a lift. No one's day was made worse by giving a fresh set of nice clothes, you know what I mean? It always does add something. So yeah, just one of those things. I've been told, and I actually, something I asked Klopp about in the summer, about his impact on the training stuff, and again, he, you know, he, it's important, it's very, very important to him, because again, marginal gains, if you don't feel comfortable, or if you feel like you look like a bell end, you're having to do work psychologically to go to reassure yourself that you don't, before you even get into the work that you're meant to be thinking about. And if that's a one percentage thing, if that causes one bit of pause for thought, it's just stuff that's getting in the way of what you're trying to achieve. So yeah, fascinating stuff. And it's mad, because I hear loads of little stories, and I've told some of them to you, some on camera, some off camera, of all these mad things that are going on around Liverpool that we're just not privy to. But when you get a conversation with a specialist in an outside field who has an impact on what Liverpool do, we as fans have got no real idea of the scope. Because we've all got experience of football, and fundamentally it's 11 fellas walking onto a pitch and putting on a kit and kicking a ball around. But like, the level of like sci-fi that goes on behind the scenes is absolutely...
We had one yesterday.
Yeah, absolutely real, about like player tracking and stuff, like just crazy, absolutely bonkers. So the agenda for this has had to be changed. I guess this stuff will have been... We did a good like 10, 15 minutes on the build-up show. It's had to be cut out because Sadio Mane apparently came out with some absolutely outlandishly bold quotes about Liverpool. And
didn't sound like him.
Yeah, he basically, the line that got picked up was saying, this is not a team of chokers, we will be champions. It's been vociferously denied by Sadio Mane since. The Echo have gone on record with this. And first and foremost, what it looks like is that the world's worst newspaper has just made up an absolute load of horse shit, which will come as no surprise to anyone, and peddled it. Because there was no legitimate citation for where these quotes were coming from. No one could find any video of it or whatever. It was reportedly something that he said at the African Player of the Year Awards to a local institution.
What was that?
Yeah, no, it's taken this long to get it and translate it or something. But obviously, for those who haven't seen it, it was Manny basically expounding on this notion that Liverpool are not scared about it. What we got to the, it's interesting though, because now that we know it's not real, how do you feel? Because
my opinion on it was, it's brilliant that he thinks like that. And my guess is he thinks like that anyway.
Yeah.
He just hasn't verbalised it. Am I arsed? No, probably not.
It was so unlikely that Sadio Mane did this. You know what I mean? He is notorious. Like, the Northwest Press Pack hate being handed Sadio Mane as an interview in press conferences and all that stuff, because he doesn't talk. He hates it. He hates doing interviews. It's why he doesn't do them. The idea that even back, you know, he's gone back to Africa for a big party, you know, at the African Player of the Year Awards.
Just went to laugh at Salah, really, didn't
yeah,
he?
Yeah, just the buzz off Salah's dancing. The idea that, you know, it's one of those things that it didn't feel totally I don't think enough people questioned it.
Listen, there is I don't know this because I've never been elite at anything in my entire life, but there is a mentality, we talk about
you
it, an elite
restaurateur.
There is a mentality that people need to get to the top of what they're doing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think back to the Sturridge and the religion stuff, and I used to think that got him to where he is.
Yeah.
Leave him alone.
Yeah.
Whether you believe in it or you don't, leave him alone, because he believes in it and it gets him to win. And it got him bloody far, mate. He was playing for England. He was banging goals in the Premier League. Yeah. He was an elite centre forward. hurt through injury, unfortunately. And Sadio Mane will think about that. He won't be going into games thinking he's going to get beat. He won't be going into games thinking he's crap. He'll be going in thinking he's the best player on the pitch and he wants to prove it. And he'll be furious that Salah plays in the same side as him, but he'll love it at exactly the same time, because that's what the elite mentality is. And so he can think it all day long. He can say it if he fucking wants. I'm not arsed.
Yeah.
Because I don't want Liverpool going into games thinking we're going to get beaten by fucking Crystal Palace at home. That's not the mentality that you want.
I've gone into football.
Do you think Arsenal's Invincibles went through the season thinking we're going to get beat here eventually? No, they went in thinking we're going to do this. Did you think the Centurions thought they were going to end up on 99? No. They went to try and fucking achieve it, and they thought they were the best in the world, and they went and proved it.
Yeah, absolutely. I think about thematic time, and maybe this is where it comes down to, again, this lack of an elite experience, elite mentality. I've gone into plenty of football matches thinking, we're going to get tonked here.
Yeah.
Or thinking, I've got no idea how this is going to go down, and you know, and you wary, and you see it happen before your eyes, and you're like, oh well, we'll see how it goes, and we'll make a judgment as it goes along. These guys don't have any of that. They've gone from, you know, we live in fear that it's all going to come collapsing down around our ears, because it's happened to us plenty of times before. In the reality, so people look at Liverpool's near misses and think, well, that's just a sign that Liverpool are big bottlers and it's going to happen again and again and again. That squad don't think that. Jürgen Klopp doesn't think that. They look at it from the absolute positive perspective of, we've made it to 3 cup finals, and yes, we lost them, but we made it there, and we made it under these circumstances in the first year, and then we made it to a Champions League final. And that, I think sometimes we denigrate that. I don't know how it ends up being a bad thing, and it's probably because it was such an outlier, so it felt a bit 13-14, like Liverpool came out of nowhere to be in a Champions League final. We need to get to probably like the semi-finals a few times for us to feel like it's at a spell of Liverpool being a dominant force again to truly appreciate what we've done. But these players don't do that. Whether it's true or not, it's not how they think, and it's how they're sold. Jürgen Klopp comes in and goes, he said it again, he said it to us. You know, it's a bounce back's not an opportunity, it's a duty or whatever. That was his mantra. You got here, you were good enough to get to a Champions League. On another day, you'd be European Cup champions. Now, what are you going to do about it? Are you going to cry about it? Are you going to cry about it, you little dickhead? No, you're going to pick yourself up, you're going to dust yourself down. You're not worse. You're even better at football now. And you're better and you're stronger and you're more mature and you're wiser and you're fitter and you're all these things. Let's go into it and hunt it
down.
You're
also tired from the World Cup.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, but you're fired up a little bit. But, you know, and that's, you're dead right on all that stuff. I think we as fans are just massive shithouses. And I'm kind of upset that some of these things are not real, because I like the fucking bollocks of it. It reminded me of when Rafa come out ahead of the Champions League semi-final with Chelsea in 2005 and said, we'll win. And it was like, what the hell? What, Rafa had been so just reserved and so calm the whole way, just come out and went, just scored it down. Come on then, we're doing this. We're going to get to the final. We're going to go and do this. And it was so out of character, and it was so out the blue. It made, you know what I mean? It was so inspiring.
It jolted the lads, didn't it? You know, yeah, Rafa was the manager that he was, and so for it to be so out of character, it had an effect. It's like,
Deja,
you know what it's
saying,
like,
it just makes me fucking
no. Here's how it is, right? Football Manager. We've all played it. We all hate the fucking press conferences. We probably all say the same thing each and every week. But on that big game, you fucking change it up, hoping that the lads have heard that message over and over. This time, this will fire them up, and you get that big performance.
Seem disinterested. No, what are you doing? Yeah. No, here, yeah. Here.
But Deja Lovren comes out and does it every fucking week.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I can understand why people would think differently about Deja Lovren.
The bodies of the dead of footballers who've played for Liverpool, who've tried to do these big talk interviews, and it's gone completely tits up. I just scattered a litany of them throughout Liverpool's history, particularly when we were a bit crap. You know, your Harry Kewells and your Joe Coles used to come out with this bollocks all the time. Sad. The good thing about it, and again, it's irrelevant because it obviously didn't happen, but it's why I was pleased enough with it, is that he's got the skills to back it up. And he's the kind of lad who probably would be like, back himself to just go and slot a couple at the weekend and be like, me, go. Thanks very much. Right, if you want more on the latest Liverpool news and transfer stuff as well, not too much in this podcast on the transfer stuff, of course, but yeah, get over to theredmentv.com. The Reds transfer roundup show is being recorded on Thursday. That's about all you need to know about Liverpool off the pitch. Right, Brighton, Chris.
Look, it was a 1-0 win. He said
Brighton, but are we really going to be talking about Brighton?
No, we're going to be talking about...
The agenda doesn't say just Brighton.
It doesn't. It says Brighton, but mainly Fabinho.
Nice.
I've done the Brighton bit there. So Fabinho... no, Brighton was fine. I'm hoping that it's just one of those results that we'll forget even happened, hopefully in a few weeks' time, where it was vital that Liverpool got back on the horse. We talked about that in the build-up, and they did. And what was one of the most encouraging things to come out of the Brighton game, I thought, was Fabinho. And that could have been... we've had to play players out of position in the past. That could have been a disaster. It didn't look likely to be a disaster, but or it could have just been bang average. I thought he was absolutely excellent in centre-half.
Yeah, I do as well. And it's mad because... Virgil van Dijk will get a lot of credit for it, and maybe more so than Fabinho, and that just shouldn't be the case, should it?
Anyone can do that job playing alongside Virgil van Dijk.
But you're actually doing Fabinho a bit of a disservice there, because he's got good defensive instincts and he plays the ball well, and actually, he plays that position more like Matip on the front foot defensively. I think, it's hard to say against the Brighton side, they didn't get a shot off on target. But with the ball at his feet, he was doing what he was doing from the midfield. And he was trying to hit players further up the pitch and stuff. And it was interesting that actually they gave Fabinho more time than they gave Van Dijk. I actually think that was the wrong decision, because I think Fabinho's a better passer than Virgil van Dijk. Well, on rewatch, they gave him too much time and space, and he was able to hit midfielders all the time or fullbacks and stuff. So you think of that one where he very early on in the game, actually, the Firmino chance comes from a Fabinho raking long ball. I think their defender gets a little flick on and it goes to Robertson, doesn't it? And the ball's straight in there to Firmino and he misses that one. That's the type of stuff that Fabinho can do. Defensively brilliant. But on the front foot, his speed of thought is excellent. One touch, two touch, that he doesn't dwell on the ball. He just moves the ball forward quickly. I love watching him play.
It's interesting because we talk about that we've got a very horses for courses situation going on for things. We still have what we perceive to be our defensive fullback is more solid fullback is Gomez. If we want a centre half who plays it out a bit more, and you've got that going on with it, you'd put Matip in over Lovren if you want your guys to all heroism and fight and big headers and all that. You're putting Dejan Lovren in those situations. Fabinho kind of does a bit of all of that, and I can understand. We had the shout. Was it in the final word about could he be considered for centre half? No, not now.
You wouldn't be. It's too important to the midfield. Exactly, is the honest answer.
Exactly that. I think you're right. But what it also showed, you could see the benefits to having. Why Gomez stands out as a centre half as well. Lads who are comfortable in possession of the football, and not just comfortable when they're stood still and they've got time. Lads who are proactive in their use of a football, because how many teams you've got to let someone have the ball, because it's unless you're going man for man across the entire pitch. Someone you're going to have to leave someone in possession of someone, unless you're going full mad bonkers press, and in which case all the best, by the way.
Actually works better that way.
Yeah
for having someone like a Fabinho on the ball.
Exactly that, and that's the thing is, you want to start to get more and more ball players into your team, and I think this feeds into the Klein situation, why Milner is absolutely fine to play right back for us, why we love Andy Robbo, Virgil van Dijk's brilliant, but in Fabinho you can see how if we target another centre half, don't be surprised if he looks a bit like Fabinho.
I'd actually say that the prototype is Virgil van Dijk.
Sure.
Because Virgil van Dijk can do it all. Listen, he might look like Fabinho, whatever. I don't know enough about Fabinho in centre half to say that would be the prototype. It would just be another Virgil. Yeah. It would be a right footed Virgil in my head. Because Virgil can win headers, control a line. He's what would it be? Was it commanding centre back?
Yeah.
But he's a cultured commanding centre back in Football Manager terms.
The complete centre half.
He absolutely is. Yeah. There's no facet of his game that you think that needs improving upon. The only point that I've ever heard raised about him is he sometimes looks lax. Sometimes.
Yeah, that's it. It's a fine balance in that between being absolutely up for the fight and being so cool that you can handle pressure situations, and flicking that switch or just getting the balance set right on that can be a thing. And if that's his biggest issue, then so be it.
I'm not even sure it is.
No, I know. I can understand, and I can see it, because you see a couple of times where he gets pissed off with himself. You know, like things where he swings a boot at something. The Virgil, the stock Virgil van Dijk mistake is ball gets whipped in, perfectly easily kickable, clearable one, and he slices clothes because he just waves a foot at it.
That happens with his left foot. He plays left centre half. That's how that happens, and I've seen it every single week on Watchback. He gets annoyed. He's also probably the best centre back that I've seen with his wrong foot.
Yeah.
He clears the ball with that left foot more than any other right footed centre half that I've seen. And he's frustrated because he probably thinks of himself as both footed and he's not.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah, but it's cool. Like, and I think it's a credit to Fabinho. And we're talking about this versatility of footballer. I genuinely thought we were getting a proper DM, just someone who's going to come in. You know, because there was talk about some of the players we were linked with, and I was like, yeah, I wouldn't mind like Steven and Zonzi, and I wouldn't mind a couple of these other lads who just come in and they go and they break play up and they win it back and they knock it on and what have you. And the more and more I see of him, the more impressed I am. And, you know, we've not seen him at right back yet, but the point that remains is that he plays right back for Brazil. Brazil are fine playing him at right back. I'm sure he'd be absolutely amazing if he had to play right back for us as well. And this is what we're constructing, and you realise the quality. He's like 6'3", so he wins everything in the air. He's got great feet for a big lad, great touch for a big lad. He's pretty fast.
Decent podcast, that as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Not that I've ever listened to it.
It's good.
He's got a bit of everything. He is Van Dijk-esque in that regard. I don't know whether that's true of him as a centre half, but as a footballer, there's very little he doesn't have, and I'm so glad that he settled, because it was interesting because you said at the start of the season, because everyone was getting a hard on for Naby Keita, and you said, I think Fabinho's going to have the most transformative effect on Liverpool's midfield. And I'll admit, I thought, nah, look, it's so obviously going to be Keita. Fabinho looks, we make the Riera comparisons, the Yaya comparisons. If he ends up being after player that either of them were, he's going to be absolutely magnificent.
I remember doing a stats and tactics show on the website. We do it on all the big signings and stuff like that, and all the big players that were close to signing. So we've done them for, you know, players that we haven't signed in the past and stuff.
Nabil Fekir,
but we didn't release that one. And we did one on Fabinho, and we've obviously done one on Keita as well. And I looked at it and thought to myself, he's more than what everyone says he is. You know, because quite frankly, no one watches French football. So you go there, and I took a 90-minute game and I looked at an entire performance from his in a game, and I just saw something that is more than just the DM. You know, he's playing 1-2s on the right-hand side and bombing on. Well, he got 2 assists in 2 games back-to-back. One of those was from a 1-2 where he crossed the ball, and I think it was to Mo Salah. And it was pretty much exactly what I'd seen on the tape before. Yeah. And you see these things, and you try and imagine how you're going to play. Now, at the time, I was thinking in a 4-3-3. Mm-hmm. I was thinking it'd be that defensive midfielder, but somebody else would sit in while he goes.
Yeah.
And I thought that what we've seen last season was a fluid front three. I always thought this season we'd see a fluid midfield three where it didn't matter who was playing, they could all play the DM. And I actually think that might have been the case start of the season. Gini, Henderson, Fabinho, Keita, any of them can drop in. And I think probably now, with the exception of Keita, all three of them, you'd be all right with at six. But Fabinho, when I did another stats and tactics on him not too long ago, when he just broke into the side, and there were still doubters about him. I think the feedback on the show was, this lad's going to be brilliant. Because he showcased it, I highlighted it,
yeah,
was this ability for him to play one-touch, two-touch football. And you don't notice it during games as much because you focus on where the next pass is.
Yeah.
Your eyes might drift to where that free man is. And the amount of times he plays one-touch football is incredible. Or he'll take one touch and then you'll notice the dink over the top. It is his speed of thought and movement. And I remember hearing a stat years and years ago when Arsenal were winning the league that they were the fastest passers of the ball in the Premier League, mm-hmm, by a country mile, a good half a second faster than the Man United who were chasing them at the time. And that's the thing that he does. He speeds up our midfield play. He might play exactly the same ball as Jordan Henderson. I'd say 75% of the time he will play the same ball as Jordan Henderson.
The ball's the ball, isn't it?
The ball's the ball, but he plays it faster, mm-hmm, and he moves the team around and he forces them. For example, against Brighton, I felt it was too easy for their five-man midfield to jog 10 yards over while we first half moved the ball quite slowly side to side. I don't think Fabinho lets you do that. He tires you out more.
Yeah.
And then second half, we capitalise on that.
Yeah, very exciting stuff, though. I say it's really encouraging to see. And you know, when you consider there was a spell at the end of the season, we were just looking, going, what's the point? What is he? What does he do? And I keep coming back to it. Like Liverpool in general, you know, he's another one that we're enjoying him at this level. I think he's still got levels to go, gears to move up into. And if we're able to do that, we still say this. We still haven't seen the midfield that Liverpool, the Klopp bought. You know, yes, obviously, Genie, he brought in, he's obviously integrated him, but, you know, we still haven't seen a potential midfield three of Fabinho, Keita, and Oxlade-Chamberlain.
Mm.
And that is a, think about how frightening that midfield could be. That midfield would potentially have absolutely everything in it, and we're not even there yet. Keita's not adapted, Oxlade-Chamberlain's out injured, and Fabinho's only really in the last, 6 weeks? 2 months starting to really find his feet in the team. Yeah, cannot wait for that. We're going to talk on Palace in a second, but before we do, Chris sat down with the Anfield Wrap's Neil Atkinson on this week's Newsroom podcast. Have a little listen to this.
But these things are all on like one large graph, but I think that's what's at the core of all this. And then it becomes, we don't want you enjoying yourself. And I think there's something else as well with Liverpool, and we need to remember we feel it with United, in that there's a huge number of supporters around the country who had childhoods ruined by how good Liverpool were.
Yeah.
And our childhood was ruined by how good United were.
Yep.
So when you see United, if United right now were 4 points clear at the top of the Premier League, you, me, we'd be thinking, oh no, here we go again. And that's exactly what's happening with us. So when we think, well, why isn't everyone wanting us to do what you, there was the Henry Winter piece about, everyone should be behind Liverpool. Liverpool are doing this and Liverpool are doing this. And they're a club that's connected to the community and they seem like good lads and they're playing really good stuff and they're up against this Man City side that are a behemoth now.
Cheating.
Yeah. why isn't everyone behind Liverpool? The reason why is because everyone has a thing somewhere where they're thinking, if they win one, they can win three. If they win one, they can win three and we can't stop them.
I get that, but is this passed down through generations then? Because a lot of, you know, social media isn't our age.
No.
You know what I mean? They can be, I don't know how old a lot of people are on social media.
Of course it is. Football, the way you think about football, I do think that there is always something in the line about football DNA. Yeah, of course it's passed down. Of course it's there, it's present. It's not just the idea that people sort of saying stuff. It's this sort of folk memory. There's a really good story. Remember when Rush went to Newcastle?
Yeah.
And my lad who was in our school was at the game, and he was at the game with his brother, his older brother, and his older brother was 15 years older than him. And it was 60 minutes on the clock, and he said, and he went, tell you what, Rush has been quiet. And his older brother went, don't say that. Don't you say that. And then Rush turns, scores, Newcastle win 1-0. And he said his older brother was livid with him. Like, how dare you tempt the footballing gods of Ian Rush like that? I've lived a lifetime of putting up with this, and you've just said Rush is quiet. You never say Rush is quiet.
You can think it, but never verbalise.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can get the Newsroom podcast every single week. Chris sits down with some wonderful people from the world of Liverpool, media, journalism, etc. Neil Atkinson, what are your favourite ones you've actually done?
Yeah, I mean, definitely my favourite this year.
Is that the first?
Yeah. Don't want to piss off the other guests. No, they're all good in their own way, you know what I mean? But I think he's such an interesting bloke, and he comes at life with this sort of larger than life effervescent personality, and he just brings that to talking about Liverpool as well. And he's so fascinating, and he's so much more than just the presenter of the Anfield Wrap, and we delved into that. Like, so there's always like some timely stuff that we discuss on the show. My favourite part of the show is when I just asked him about the life and quizzed him about stuff and the decisions and how they got there and stuff. And like the Mel Reddy one was fantastic. Maddox's been brilliant. I got Bascom coming up next week, Liam Prescott this week and stuff. Like, going back through the archive, Mel Reddy talking to Mel Reddy as a woman in a male dominated industry was just mind blowing. And I had so much feedback from people saying, she was so inspiring to me.
Yeah.
And it's so good to hear that we're able to do something just a little bit different than everybody else.
Yeah.
And this Neil Atkinson one was, as you'd expect, absolute giggles.
Brilliant. Giggles it was. So if you want to see and hear more giggles, get up to theredmentv.com and sign up for that. That is amongst the clutch of incredible content that we bring you every single week. As it is free for the first month. Go over there, check it out. You can get that. You can get, 4 whole weeks. If you time it right, sometimes it's more than 4 weeks because that's how months work.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile.
From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
And you can see everything that we do. You can trial it, and if you want to keep it, it's just £5 a month thereafter. Crystal Palace, Chris. Quite simply, just not now, Roy.
Yeah, I think you've written that wrong.
I'm not going to call him. I'm not going to use the W.
No?
Not yet.
Why?
Because I've promised to be, because of the win they got over Man City, I promised to be slightly nicer to Roy Hodgson. I don't like him. I don't think he's a good manager. The best moment of his entire career, though, was that BBC post-match interview where he accused the interviewer of taking the piss, which is, if he'd done that at Liverpool, I'd have fucking loved him. I love forthright managers are great, apart from Neil Warnock and his Brexit opinions, which can get in the fucking bin, the weirdo. Regardless of all this Hodgson stuff, same as like Rafa coming and all these things, I don't think Roy Hodgson particularly likes us. We don't particularly like him.
You're kidding.
Yeah.
He hates us.
Yeah. And he would be absolutely made up to come back in here and just, piss on our chips. We could very much do with that not being the story of the week.
Absolutely. I mean, it's so difficult now for me because 16 more games. 16 more games, 15 more wins, and never felt like this before this early on in a season. 13-14 was different and mad, but it didn't feel...
We started to hit the accelerator at this point in 13-14, didn't we? So we were so swept up in how amazing we were, you weren't really aware of the consequences of
but this isn't this isn't just this season, it feels bigger than that. That 13-14 season for me was an isolated event, or a series of isolated events, I suppose. This has felt like the culmination of the hard work from Klopp and his 4 years as Liverpool manager, and it feels like we've built this the right way. It feels like we deserve, as a team, not as a fan base, to be here, because they've worked incredibly hard and we've signed right and we've recruited well, not just on the pitch but off the pitch. The club's moving in the right direction off the pitch as well, and it feels closer to the community again. And it's almost like if you can fall in love again with something you're already in love with.
Yeah.
That's happened this season.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely.
And it just means so much. And like every team, I'm just going to be nervous about.
Yeah. I'm not, all these people talk about Liverpool being Liverpool fans being unbearable and all that. I mean, I think overlooks the fact that every fan base has got a massive section of absolute blurts that support them and vocalise their opinions on social media. The vast majority of us, I think, it's just such a relief. I'm not having a good time. We keep preaching this, enjoy the ride, yada, yada, yada. It's horseshit. It's not so much of enjoying the ride. It's try not to be too fucking downbeat about the ride. Try to soak in as much of it as you can. I equate this season to being at the best gig I've ever been to in my entire life. And really, I'm enjoying it. Every song's an absolute belter, but I'm just tired and I'm uncomfortable and I'm sweaty and people are buffeting me. I can't fully appreciate the experience of what I'm taking in, but I know I'm going to wake up tomorrow morning with the memory of all this incredible gig. I just can't be asked to have to go through the process of doing it because it's such hard work for the reward. But inevitably, we're over halfway through. This season has flown by. more so than any I think I can remember, and some of that's just because we're getting older and years do fly by quicker the older you get. And also sleep deprivation from being parents is a big, you know, just brain damage basically has been occurring over the last, you know, 7 years. But before we know it, it's going to be May, and we'll either be champions or we won't be champions. And these are the kind of games that I've got it here. We need this spell, and I encompass Brighton into this, to be yada 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 3 points.
Yeah,
you've got Brighton, you've got this, and is it Leicester? We've got off the back. These need to be hook or by crook. As boring, as simple as possible. 1-0, 2-0, however you want to go about it. Get 9 points in the bag, and then we'll forget this section of the season.
Yeah, I mean, I feel slightly differently to you. I am enjoying the ride, but I was definitely enjoying it more in December, you know, because of the teams that you beat, quite frankly. You know, can you get better than Everton?
Yeah, exactly.
Can you get better than Everton? Can you get better than Shaqiri scoring two against Manchester United?
This is a whole new different set, because you're dead right, because that Everton thing was one of the most incredible experiences I've ever had in football. Finally beating Man United after a spell of having such a tough time against them, you know, beating Arsenal, etc.
But these aren't, because this isn't this on your heart rate monitor.
No.
What we're doing now is there's a pressure all season long, but we're not having those huge spikes because we're just dominating sides. And it's boring.
Yeah.
And it's great because it's boring, because I've seen us ship 50 goals a season. It's not fun.
Yeah.
You know, you can be 2-0 up and think, fucking hell, we need another here.
Yeah.
We don't need that with this side. So maybe on an individual game by game basis, it's not so cool. But actually, looking back at the entire season, this is the best we've had.
Yeah, no, without a doubt. And, you know, in the very obvious terms, the league position should tell us everything we need to know. It's that thing, isn't it? We just redefine the little idiot fearful voice in our heads with every spell of things that come up. And it's those things. I look at these games and I just, again, I'm not asked. There'll be people who are like, again, we're going to go back to that world where Man City are playing, Huddersfield away. They're going to absolutely tonk them everywhere. That's going to be another 5-0, 6-0 job, because why not? And our fans will cast jealous glances at that. And if Liverpool are making hard work of these games, there will be an external pressure, maybe an internal pressure. We look at that, and it would be nice just to start dispatching teams and really, really start to fly through things. But it's not... Not necessary. It would be so annoying to have done all this hard work to fuck it against some shit. You know.
What do you think Man City are thinking, sitting there at the moment, thinking we're bottle jobs?
No,
but like they might be if
maybe
we win
more
the league.
Maybe more than Liverpool are, but yeah.
Maybe if they don't win the league this year, maybe they are bottle jobs. Maybe they're the first league champions that are bottle jobs. You know what I mean?
Hmm.
They've got everything they need to go and be league winners, but they haven't got as many points as us.
This team.
So work, you know, Liverpool working hard for wins, I'm fine with.
Yeah.
And you know what? I'd like to see Liverpool score 5 and 6 every single week, but I'm quite happy knowing that we don't rotate that much.
Yeah.
And I don't think we can put our foot to the gas quite as much as Manchester City do. And we attack in different ways than they do. And I think they're better at some phases of the game than we are. But we're better at some phases of the game than they are.
Yeah.
And that's what you can't. You've never had two teams exactly the same, built in exactly the same way.
Yeah.
You are your manager on the field and how he wants to play football. Guardiola's got one style, Klopp's got another. Klopp's changed his style because it hasn't worked against Guardiola's all-conquering Manchester City side, but he's found something that's working right now, and we're sticking with it, and we should enjoy that.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, goals make that all that easier, don't they, ultimately? But like I say, it's that thing of, we're in that position now where it's like that losing to City is a bit like catching one on the jaw in a big fight, and it's not enough to knock it out, but maybe. But you know that if you don't gather yourself for the rest of the round, then you leave yourself open to that knockout. So if you try to immediately go a bit too big or whatever back, like, oh, don't, you know, what you need to do is get your composure, get yourself set again, and just get back to your game plan, because things happen. And that's what this is for me. And it's, you know, the teams that we're playing should help us with that. But that's what these points are so much more important than the method in which we achieve them. Because, look, if we win these next two games like 5-0, then that could be very important. That could inform how Man City approach the season, because they might just think, oh God, what's the point? Because, you know, not only are they ahead of us in points, they're matching us in terms of performance level. That could have a damaging psychological impact. But realistically, the best thing you can do is just get back to doing what we were doing, get back to the form and the style that got us to where we are, and then trust that if we need to go up that gear, we've got the ability to
absolutely
to go up the gear.
Absolutely, mate.
Questions this week come from Alan G, LFC. If Klopp suddenly left Liverpool tomorrow, who would you appoint as the next Liverpool manager?
Pochettino.
Ooh. Wow, that's a great
I think he's a great manager, and I always have done, and I love the way his Tottenham side play football, and I don't think it's too dissimilar to how we play either, to be fair. Like,
I think that's a fantastic shot. I'd not even consider that. I was honestly thinking continuity, and actually your answer kind of gives you that, because you're right, you're not reinventing the wheel. If he comes in, he could probably pick up pretty much where we left off with a tweak or two. So I was thinking either just give it to Pep Linders till the end of the season, or you go, David Wagner's just left Huddersfield, hasn't he? Just someone who can come in who knows what you've got already. You don't want another manager to come in with a completely different style and go, oh well, fuck it, defensive football now, lads, let's cling on for our lives, or, you know, X, Y, Z. So yeah, it it fills me with a cold dread, the idea that Jürgen Klopp could ever be anywhere other than the Liverpool dugout. But yeah, thanks for that, Alan. Boy of the Wilds. Ryan Babel back in the Premier League with Fulham. Thoughts? Really?
Aw. Didn't like him when he was here.
Didn't you?
Don't like him anymore now.
What didn't you like about him?
Crap.
I heard a great thing when he was not long with me, it was his first season, and I heard a lad say that apparently he cut him some slack, because apparently he was afraid of crowds, and so he was having to work hard on being able to be in atmospheres like Anfield and stuff, which was the most pathetic thing I think I'd ever heard in my entire life. I quite like Ryan Babel. He was one of those players that he represented the exact right. It was that was the perfect summer's transfer business.
It really was.
Well, I think we got Lucas, didn't we? We got Fernando Torres, and Fernando Torres being the big bit of business, the big senior player who takes you up a level, and then you go and get a young lad to develop for the future. And you know, that early part of that season, where did I reference it? Was it even earlier on this podcast? The Ryan Babel body swerve against Derby and stuff like. He showed such great promise. He had an absolute thunderbolt of a shot on him. But the more he played, the more you realised how he was a bit like Jose Enrique, in that he could beat a man, but he needed them to come to him. If you just left him in space, cold, he couldn't do anything. He'd stand there and flounder, whereas he needed to draw people in, because he was great at rolling people and make things happen. But yeah, he never really hit the line. I'm glad to see he's back, and moreover, because it's only, I think it's like a year on from us doing creating the fake transfer rumour.
It's got to be more than that, really.
Yeah, a year, maybe 18 months from creating the fake transfer rumour that he'd signed for Newcastle, and fooling several public online publications and a lot of Newcastle fans on the Port Street Deadline Day show. So good to see him. Good to see Ryan Babel back in the Prem. He's going to score one absolute wonder goal probably in the next 2 weeks, and that'll be him done, I reckon.
Has he got red hair now?
Did look like that from the announcement photograph. Fair play. Edgar Alvarez_10. Any truth to Liverpool wanting to rival Arsenal for James Rodriguez's signature? If so, what do you guys make of it? This shit again. Can we just go?
I'd rather talk about Ryan Babel.
Honestly.
And I don't like him.
Honestly.
And I've got nothing to say about him.
Can we just go one transfer? I saw this like back end of last week. James Rodriguez, Liverpool's on News Now, and I went, I didn't even click it. I was like, it's complete and utter horse shit, because it's just such an obvious thing. I guess his loan to Bayern's finally up at the end of the season. He's been on a 2-year loan from Real, hasn't he? I couldn't fucking care less. His career, has he been doing well for Bayern? No idea. I don't hear anyone talk about him anymore, apart from in these. He gets linked to us, Arsenal, Chelsea, probably Man United.
I think it's also safe to say we've not really started our prep for the next leg of the Champions League.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Without
20 minutes before the game.
No time for that. We've got the big boys like Crystal Palace and Leicester to think about just yet. No, I would imagine there is precisely zero truth to any rumours about James Rodriguez. I don't know where he'd play in that team, the 10. Do we really need him? Maybe if he's the player that he was at the World Cup. How many years ago was that? 5 years ago now?
Yeah.
Maybe. Nah, fuck that. I'd be arsed with James Rodriguez, to be perfectly honest.
I'm glad you didn't ask me about that because I think he's wank.
Let him sign for Arsenal. And let them all go mad. And then, you know, did you see that? Actually, I think Arsenal Fan TV tweeted it. The list of the wages that Arsenal players are on.
Days.
Yeah.
Ozil.
Is on.
300k.
Yeah.
300k. But there's some completely mad ones. Like
Sead Kolasinac is on like
90 or something.
No, he's on like
120.
Nearly like 200. Nearly like.
But then you look at like Callum Chambers, he's on 25, yeah. And Holden's on like 40,
yeah.
Or something like that. And you're like, oh my days, there's some proper bad management.
You can
been going
see
on
that
there.
Last 12 months. Where they have panicked and thrown money at the problem.
Lacazette, Aubameyang,
Ozil, and Sead Kolasinac also came in on a free transfer. I think Lickstein is on a reasonable amount of money as well. It's probably 400
years
old.
Who's the centre mid? The eight? Granit Xhaka.
Oh, Granit Xhaka.
My word, he's on a lot of money too.
Yeah, absolutely hilarious. Right, we've got the bonus Q&A coming up for all you wonderful subscribers.
I bet they'll be glad Cech's retiring at the end of the year as well. He's on a wedge.
Yeah, saw that. Peter Cech retiring. It's like, great goalkeeper. Loved him. Absolutely fantastic. But yeah, he probably should have retired earlier. The bonus Q&A is called. A ton of questions. More for you guys.
When Leno signs? Oh, yeah, 100 grand a week until May.
Sit on my arse. Let me hair breathe for a bit. Daniel Newman said, if you can change the results of one cup final and one league game in Liverpool's history, which ones and why? Favourite food to eat after a heavy night on the town? There's an RMTV office MMA tournament. Who wins and how?
Oh,
in light of last night's parliamentary vote, which we could only have three EU players. Which three EU players in our current squad are you saving? What does Brexit mean for English football? Really delving into the heavy shit. If we were a gang of robbers in an Ocean's 11 kind of way, what would we rob, etc., etc. How many pairs of glasses has Chris lost or broken during the game? And our favourite Liverpool cult hero, get over to the redmentv.com right now for more of this right there, answering those questions and probably a hell of a lot more. See you all soon. Walk on. Boom.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.